Welcome to the Tracking Connections podcast, and thanks for listening.
We feature voices from around the world sharing stories of working intentionally with deep nature connection in ways that transform lives, families, projects, and communities. I'm Sarah.
I'm Aiden.
And I'm John.
And we are your hosts from Living Connection First.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 15 of Tracking Connections podcast. This is Aiden, and I'm here with John and Sarah and Craig Foster, the author of Amphibious Soul, Finding the Wild in a Tame World.
Hey, everyone. Sarah here. John and I have had the opportunity to be on a Craig Foster tour while he's been here in the Bay Area. Feeling really inspired on many different levels of what Craig is offering with his book, what he's bringing to the world, and just how really resonant it is with our experience of deep connection with nature. So I'm feeling really grateful that Craig's here and also really excited about the conversation that we'll have today. And I'll pass it to John.
Well, yes. Hi, everybody. And Craig, I just wanted to start with kind of a bit of an origin story, because back before we met, my friend Anna Breitenbach, who is now your friend, was on her way from California to South Africa, back to her homeland. And she'd been here for a number of years, and she was working with me with tracking and lots of other wonderful endeavors. And when she headed out, I said, you know, the person who made The Great Dance, you know, whoever made that movie, whoever was behind that, was really somebody who I feel like I must get to know, because there's things I have to ask. There was insights in that movie that I'd never seen shared in any other documentary ever. And it was so brilliant. This person, whoever was behind this, I must know them. And if you run into this man, Craig Foster, when you get back to South Africa, please give him this CD from me that I did on intuitive tracking, because I'd love for him to listen to it, and maybe he and I could get together someday. So, Craig, what was the other side of that from your perspective?
Yeah, it's an incredible story. I mean, South Africa is a big place, so the chance of, you know, that CD ever finding it to me was pretty low. And I think it took a week or even a few days for me to run into Anna. I'd never met her before. And I think it was on, if I remember correctly, on Clifton Beach, which is not very far from where I grew up. And there was this interesting person, and she handed me this CD, and I was like, well, what's going on here? And then when I found out that you were connected to Tom Brown Jr. and that extraordinary childhood you'd had being mentored by him, I got very excited, because I'd, as a very young person, grown up on Tom Brown's books and been so inspired by them. And then when I listened to the CD, I immediately knew there was a brother on the other side of the planet, because I connected so strongly with what you were doing and saying, but also the feeling in your voice and the connection you had with nature and with tracking. So it was an amazing privilege. And I think this is what's cool about doing these films and writing these books, is you do meet the most extraordinary people that think in a similar way. So, yeah, I'm very, very blessed to know you, John, and now meet Sarah and Aiden. So exciting to have a tracking family on the other side of the planet. Mm. And I just also so appreciate the incredible support you guys have given me while I've been in America. I'm very out of my comfort zone. Normally diving in the great African sea forest, trekking there every day, and here I'm jumping from city to city in aeroplanes and meeting so many people. But it's been super inspiring. People have been very kind, but especially appreciate your guys' support. Thank you.
Such a pleasure. Truly. So much gratitude for, again, what you're bringing, Craig. So I'm curious, you expressed, you know, that recognition of a brother and shared experience when you listened to John's intuitive tracking CD. I'm just wondering if you wouldn't mind saying a little bit more, because I've been struck by the similarities of your stories and my experience tracking, and the way that John and I talk about connection experiences and tracking experiences. It's just, it's kind of shockingly the same, right? Or it's just so very similar, the way that you talk about relationships and the felt sense of connection and, you know, asking questions and having the questions come back to you. So when you listened to that CD that Anna handed you of John, I'm curious if there was particular things that stood out to you that said, oh, this is resonant. And if that perhaps related at all to the mentoring that you received from the San Bushman.
Yeah, I think that's the key thing, Sarah. So what we experienced in the Central Kalahari, this is a long time ago, in 1998, was this extraordinary master tracker, Karua Longwani, was doing a ritual tracking hunt where, and they do this very, very seldom. You know, I think the last time he did it was 5 years previously. And he was testing himself against an animal, putting his bows and arrows down and running after that animal in extreme heat, well over 100 degrees Fahrenheit. And he had very little water. Either he dies or the animal dies, or he doesn't get the animal. And the Central Kalahari is very difficult terrain in that you cannot see very far. You know, you can be in your campsite, and if you're not, you know, a tracker or not, you haven't got good direction, you go for a pee and get lost because you can't see, and everything looks the same. So what was fascinating was that eventually, after many weeks, he'd found the animal in the right conditions. It was hot enough, and started running. And of course, the animal just runs out of sight immediately. And he was following the tracks for a while. And then he left the tracks completely. And what he explained to us was that he was somehow connected to the animal and that he knew where it was, which sounded impossible. But when he flushed it out from the bushes again and again, it was obvious that he somehow was able to do this. So that's the first time that I experienced this high-level intuitive or spirit tracking, and it was absolutely fascinating, and it sort of seemed to be mysterious and difficult to understand, and I think that there's various ways that one could explain it. But what was so fascinating about listening to the CD from John, you know, from the other side of the planet, who'd been had a different experience with tracking, but was experiencing, from what I could tell, very similar things. And what I was fascinated by, what John was saying, is that he could explain it in a way that a homing pigeon could find its way home, or a big cat that was moved could find its way back home over hundreds of kilometers. So that what he was suggesting is that the human being actually has this extreme ability to find their way home or find an animal, and that perhaps because of our modern life, we've lost a lot of these abilities. If I hadn't been in the Kalahari and seen this extraordinary process, I don't think I would have believed John or been interested in it. But of course, because I'd seen this done actually several times, it was absolutely fascinating. And that's why I connected with John, and we've had extraordinary conversations about this. And when he came, one of his first visits, we actually went to see Carlos, this incredible master tracker, not far from Cape Town, and he related stories that corroborated this extraordinary human ability that some people have. I've had it underwater to some degree, but not at, I think, such a high level. And I'm not too sure if my subconscious is seeing a lot and then bringing it to the surface of my conscious mind and allowing me to find things that are hidden. As I say, it's a fascinating and a mysterious process, but it's quite real.
I feel it. And it's so interesting to me when people listen to John's CDs or that story that he shares, people resonate with it without necessarily, you know, any kind of scientific reasoning. There's something that stirs in people when they hear that story. So I want to pass it back to John, because I'm curious about, similarly, your pull to Craig. You had watched The Great Dance, and then what was that that you were recognizing and what Craig was presenting that made you say, I need to know this person?
Yeah, well, of course, when you watch The Great Dance, you don't see Craig. The only reason we know who Craig is now and what he looks like is because of my octopus teacher. I heard you say the other night that you had spent 150 films behind the camera. No one ever knew who you were. So, yeah, I was just completely mystified. When I watched The Great Dance, you know, my hair stood up. I had tears in my eyes multiple times in different ways. You know, you can like sort of go to tears because there's this particularly moving thing in a film or whatever, but there was multiple ways in which I felt moved. It wasn't like he was hitting on one emotion with this film, but I saw him lay out in that film, in the first, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes of that film, how a Bushman person is raised from childhood, all the relationships they have with the plants. You can eat this one, but you should not eat that one, right? Like all the, you know, the tracks make the lines of a map inside his head. You know, he had got Nate to, or, you know, I guess it was just Nate's own words about his own upbringing. But what this man laid out, this Bushman, was all my research was being revealed in the first 20 minutes of this film. You know, we call it the Kamana Naturalist Training Program, but that was pretty much laid out right up front. And then the holistic tracking model that we learned from Tom Brown that, you know, we've been working with for the last 40 years was all laid out. Like, it was like, okay, every person I know who's either interested in becoming a naturalist or a tracker must watch this film. And I made people watch it. I watched it 20, 30, 40 times before I reached out to Craig through Anna. And I saw something new. Every time I watched it, I saw something new that I didn't see before. Like, the film had layers of wisdom and depth in it that all matched all the research and everything that I'd committed my life to. So I was like, I've never seen any film or read any book that was so thoroughly understanding of what the deep connection journey looks like for, you know, a tracker like the Bushman. Because this was my research from 1979. I was trying to understand how to recapitulate for people in modern times, you know, Craig's, your subtitle, Finding the Wild in a Tame World. I mean, you know, my life's journey is about what is the many different pathways or formulas we could make available in a way that's friendly to modern people that would actually entice them to go on this beautiful pathway and uncover the wild in a tame world, right? Like, so this is what struck me. And I remember, Craig, when I spoke to you, finally, we had our first Zoom call before 2010, before I flew out there to help with the Animal Communicator documentary. I told you that I had tears in my eyes and my hair stood up multiple times. And you said the same thing happened for me. And I, like you, felt like there was a brother I never knew I had on the other side of the world. So it was an incredible, blessed meeting as far as I'm concerned. You know, it has been such an important connection for me. And I think for you too.
Absolutely, John. And I'm very excited about, you know, taking this further now. And I'm now meeting Sarah and George and these other incredible trackers that you have here. I want to bring our tracking team out to America and experience some of these things with you and have you guys come to Africa and experience our different forms of tracking there and hopefully take you guys tracking underwater. That would be super exciting. But I think that what we're saying really is that we've been as a species tracking for 300,000 years. And we have, as a species, we've lived in Africa for at least 75% of our time on this planet. So we're all African by nature. That's where we incubated. Every wild child up till, you know, a very short time ago in terms of our time on this planet, new tracking, new what I call this oldest language on Earth. So it's not surprising that if you start that old practice again, that we will all come to the same conclusions and basically all be speaking the same language. Now, because these connections to the wild have been severed in the last few hundred years, particularly first by agriculture and then very extremely by the Industrial Revolution, we feel that trauma of that severing so badly and so powerfully that when we reconnect and we meet somebody who's speaking that old language again, It does make the hairs stand up. It does create tremendous emotion. And we feel pulled to reuniting the wild family again. We want to reconnect with all our wild kin, but we want to connect with our wild human relations as well and be able to speak that old language. I mean, I have a great friend, Professor Louis Herman from the University of West Oahu. Same reaction he's having. He's tracking things on a different level, studying primal politics, all these things. Same reaction to the Great Dance. Same conversations we have, you know, and I work with amazing tracker now in South Africa, in Cape Town, JJ Minya. He's a Xhosa master tracker, and we come from very different cultures, but the tracking brings us together as brothers, and we connected like that. Craig Marais is another great friend of mine. I've taught him this oldest language, and we've bonded like brothers. It's just this incredible connection and bond in the wild. I have only known Sarah for a few days, but because of that, the wild just holds us together. It's a very powerful and exciting thing.
Yeah, I really feel that. And it's so kind of fascinating to me to consider how distanced we are from the practice of tracking and our natural world. And when you take that journey, you know, to reopen to that connection and to really fully embody and experience it, there is such a yearning, I think a natural yearning that emerges to say, I need to meet my people here too, right? I need to connect. I need to bring these people in, my friends, my family, the people around me into this place of connection together, right? Where we experience our natural selves. So again, that's another layer of gratitude that I have for the way that you're bringing this work to the world. And, you know, we've talked about, John has said a few times as he was moderating you over the last couple of days around the vulnerability that you're just saying it as it is, saying your experiences that could be, you know, considered really far out to people, but you're sharing it without holding back. And just really how important that is and how valuable it is for people to stand in these kind of edge truths that are actually, you know, they're on the edge of most people's experience, but they're actually very deeply natural experiences. And so I guess my question is around the intuitive kind of things that unfold, the experiences that feel deeply magical, or communications that you experience with wild animals or with the ocean or with elements of nature. Do you ever question those realities, or does it feel like something that is so part of your experience that there's no real question to be had?
I think that most of the time I'm using my knowledge of marine biology and my knowledge of archaeology, and I'm going out into the water or into the landscape, and then I'm using my knowledge that I've learned directly from the animals, the animal behavior, the tracking and everything. So I'm using, you know, basically science. And what I'm trying to do is get inside of nature, get inside of the secret lives of these animals. And I'm photographing and documenting it, writing about it and learning. Mm-hmm. I'm not trying to get inside any kind of esoteric world. The power of what I'm seeing just from the sheer biological intelligence is mind-blowing. And that's more than enough. But strangely, what occasionally happens is normally it's one animal that wants to, for some unknown mysterious reason, wants to break that barrier. What comes to mind, recently we had a giant fire that raged through Cape Town and the Western Cape. We've never had fires this big. And we had to evacuate some of our friends. There were these choppers going day and night, lifting water. It was like Apocalypse Now. Everything was burning. It was very disturbing. And I went out diving and I looked back and the mountain was just as ablaze and these huge clouds of smoke, and I'm breathing through my snorkel the smoke. It's not easy. And I swim past a whole lot of fish, and there's a particular fish that is quite common, which is called a sea bream. These fish mostly just ignore and they stay quite near the bottom. But this fish came right to the surface and looked me directly in the eye. And I just kept still. And then it opened its fins out and was displaying at me. Now, this doesn't happen much. I'm not overly familiar with this fish language. I know a lot of cephalopod language and a lot of the other animals' languages, body languages, but this is very unusual. And then the fish came closer and closer and closer. And I was in a fair amount of distress with the fires and everything. And then it made physical contact with my body, which I've never had happen with this species. And I've seen thousands of them. And when it made contact, my whole mind changed. I felt quite different. I felt far more relaxed and like in awe at this animal. It made contact several times and is not trying to bite me or hurt me. It's just hard enough so it was just the right tension. And a big fish like that could certainly, you know, draw blood. It wasn't like that. It was trying to say something, but it changed my whole day. It changed my week. I'll never forget it. Now, why is that animal coming at that time of distress? I've had the same thing with cape clawless otters coming when I've been distressed and helping me get out of that time of distress. So there's a whole lot of stuff going on that is mysterious that science cannot measure, cannot I think understand too easily. So a large part of what we're encountering and what this universe is about, we cannot understand, but I like to just give over to the mystery of that and enjoy the tremendous power and feeling and transformation that these animals sometimes give to us. And it's remarkable.
Amazing. That is such an amazing story and conveyance of your experience there. The subtitle of your book, Amphibious Soul, Finding the Wild in a Tame World. Would you say that these experiences that you're sharing around connecting with animals in particular are your way of finding the wild?
I think the animals are, they've taught me so much because say you are tracking a cuttlefish, there's a certain species of cuttlefish that I've got very close to. They teach you, you know, so much about how to move your body, how to keep relaxed. They teach you breath hold. They teach you how to not scare the other animals that will then scare the cuttlefish. So they're these incredible teachers on that level. They teach you to move in a wild way, but they also give you, because you are looking at the marks they leave, you're looking at the tracks, it teaches you about empathy. Because you, when you're tracking, you're throwing your mind into the tracks, into all the signs, and you it creates tremendous empathy for other species. But it also, what it does is it makes you realize that for 300,000 years, our species have had these multiple relationships and understandings in a very complex way with hundreds, if not thousands, of animals and plants. And that's how we've negotiated this world, and that's what's nourished us, that's what's kept us primal and alive and sparking. And largely, all those relationships have been taken away. So that wildness, all those threads to those thousands of animals that makes us fundamentally human, have been severed. So when you start reestablishing some of those, and I'll never be able to develop any of the kind of mastery of my deeper African ancestor, but at least I can get back some of it. And just that small amount I get back just nourishes my soul at such a deep level. And that's why I've, through the animals, have got this sense that we have this double life. We are, the inside of us is this wild person. It has these hundreds of thousands, if not millions of years, if you go back in the Homo genus, memories and connections. And then you've got the tame person who's affected by the modern world, all the technology, all the comforts. And of course, there's a lot. And all the education and the amazing science and the wonder of that as well. I mean, you know, we have an incredible connection to the universe and how it was formed and this 13.7 billion years of absolute wonder through science. But there's a lot of good stuff in the tame world, but it's unbalanced. The wild person is being smothered by the tame. And what I'm saying is, let's find a balance and let that incredible, wild, intelligent person come back and nourish us.
What you're speaking to reminds me of something that my grandfather Ingwe used to tell us, you know, and he called himself the grandfather because I think he said he had over 300 adopted grandchildren, you know, who had said, can I call you grandfather? You know, and he used to say, learn to hear voices in the wind and music in mountain streams and birdsong, fall asleep to the call of the whippoorwill and the owl, and dream dreams so vivid and so real that they'll not be dreams, they'll be visions. He invoked this sense of the magic of nature. And I got to hear that from as early as I can remember, because he came on the scene the year I was born. The founding of my dad's school was that same year. So I got to have Ingwe as my grandfather. But he told me as I started to get a little bit older, he said, you know, you must learn to live fully in two worlds. And, you know, I think this is what you're speaking to, the wild world and the tame world. And I think you have given some speech already to it about why it would benefit us to connect back into the wild world for, you know, for those people who are mostly in the tame world, you know. But I wonder what you would say to somebody who's sort of curious about connecting further into nature right now, but maybe isn't on that journey fully yet. You know, what is waiting for them there? You know, why find the wild again?
A beautiful question. And I mean, when you connect with the wild, your blood pressure drops, your brain chemistry changes, your whole being starts to move in the way it's been designed to work. So your health will increase dramatically, your physical health, your mental health and your well-being will dramatically improve. Sometimes it's quite a shock when you start to realize how profound it is, and it can be actually quite difficult because you're having to release a lot of the trauma that this overprocessed world can develop in us. So it's not always an easy transition. But the long-term effect of this is completely transformative for the human being, because suddenly you are in alignment with your design. Every single child, even today, is born fully wild, expecting a wild existence, and then they have to deal with something quite different. Your immune system will improve, everything. You know, so, and tracking is such an amazing way of doing this. But tracking is just one of the many ways. I mean, primal activities obviously include many things like dancing, like music, like deep social interactions, connection to the cold, so many things. So, and obviously connection to animals is one of the fundamentals. So it is a highly transformative and healthy way of existing in the world.
And I imagine then when you come back from nature and you're feeling better, that's going to have an effect on everyone that you interact with as well. And I can see that sort of spreading, you know, the positive energy in that way. And, you know, you brought up music. There's a really interesting connection here too. You know, I was a musician after I was a tracker, and after spending a lot of time in nature. And one of the things that really came to me was that the pattern recognition skills that you develop from having to recognize a coyote track in the sand or in the mud, or when it's half in gravel. Or, you know, I remember the first time that I saw a Stellar's Jay out of the corner of my eye is just this flash of blue. And I knew for certain that it was a Stellar's Jay. And then when you go to listen to music and, you know, the 12 notes are right there in front of you and they, you know, you can listen to them. It's all of a sudden it was like the language of music came easily to me. And I don't think that would have happened without the language of nature, without having to go and observe all those patterns where something could be seemingly simple, but then it can show up in so many different ways.
That's such a critical thing you're saying there. I'm sorry to interrupt, Aidan.
No, please.
I didn't want to forget, but it's so powerful because I've definitely noticed now I've spent the last 12 years diving every single day in that great African sea forest and tracking underwater every day. And my mind definitely works a lot better. I can write better. I can communicate better. It feels like it's rewired my brain to a certain degree. I mean, it obviously happens very slowly, so it's hard to track completely. So I think that what you're saying there is so interesting, and you certainly would probably be able to play music better. And there's something you said right at the beginning that was so interesting, and I didn't want to forget it, but now, of course, I have.
Maybe it was about that you're bringing those good vibes back
yes.
from nature and it's spreading.
Yes, no. So what is I thought immediately that psychologists have noticed that you will take on the feelings and the characteristics and the level of mental health of the five people that you spend most time with. So pick your friends very carefully. And I think certainly that, you know, nature has this extraordinary ability to lift us up and fill us with energy. And I use the cold water and all the dopamine and the adrenaline that comes with that to get a lot of energy. And certainly I think that it's, hopefully can be helpful to other people. But it's the thing is that it's the source. It's the wonder of the biological intelligence, the biodiversity, the life support system of this planet that's fueling that joy and that energy, what we call primal joy or wilderness rapture. It's not coming from us. It's coming from the mother of mothers through us. So we essentially are tapping into this fundamental thing that's been here for millions of years and that's keeping us alive.
Man, that what you just described is exactly what I experience with music as well. Like, especially when you're writing or you're song catching or you're improvising, that the music is emerging out of the earth as well, right? And it's simply my job to tune into it and allow it to come through me. But it's not of me. It's through me. It's of the earth. That's just beautiful.
Mm. Awesome. That's a unified consciousness that's expressing itself in all these different forms. So sometimes when you see an animal and you're in that rare state of grace, you recognize yourself.
Wow, that was profound, you guys. You know the sit spot, right?
Of course.
The practice.
The famous John sit spot.
Yeah. Yes. The practice of sit spot is, you know, your thing about having the five closest friends, you know, you will be the reflection of the five closest friends. How does this sit spot underwater relate to that? You know, like you seem to have used the underwater sit spot as a way to make friends in the way that you were just describing.
Yeah, I think that's where you've touched on something so interesting, John. So, of course, if you take that idea that we've been talking about further, maybe you'll also be your mental acuity, your mental health will also be a reflection of the five animals that you're closest to.
Mm.
And maybe they'll have even as much influence as the five humans you're closest to. So it's actually what we're saying here, and I think it's very important, and I haven't thought too much about this before, but our whole way we are and our makeup is built on the reflection of the wild world that we interact with. And the wild world would include humans and plants and animals and the soil and, you know, the sky, the universe, the stars from, you know, so the underwater world. So I think because I grew up, you know, diving from a very young age, and the Great African Sea Forest was my magical childhood kingdom, it's easier for me to relate to creatures that are underwater. And I feel extremely comfortable in that environment and most happy there. So I've chosen that. But someone who's in a city could choose a spider or an ant population or insects or birds. Doesn't matter. They're all cut from the same cloth. So I think we're onto something here that's very strong, that these relationships with the wild, which includes humans, are the sort of fundamental substance, this precious, precious substance that actually will make the story of our lives. It will actually build the story that we then will play out and become reality.
Well, that was just so poetic and beautiful. Thank you, Craig and Aidan and Sarah. I do want to just put a plug in for Craig's book, Amphibious Soul, Finding the Wild in a Tame World. And especially the audiobook, because he offers some very special sound elements within that. The music that they played from the Great African Sea Forest for Yo-Yo Ma, some of that is in there. But the book is also cool because he's giving you QR codes for little short films that he's making available to actually take you visually and audibly to this beautiful, magical realm that Craig has given voice to the voiceless, really. He's brought the voice of all these beings out to the world so that they could be heard. And just want to thank you so much, Craig, for all you're doing and all you've done and all the beautiful films that you have put in the world. People know about My Octopus Teacher, but there's so many more, like The Great Dance and so many more that are just so stunning. Craig's won over 150 awards for his documentary filmmaking. So just want to appreciate you, brother, so much for taking time and offering your good words to us. And I'll see if Sarah has anything to say on the way out here as well.
Yeah.
I just wanted to thank you guys so much. I've learned so much from you, John, and appreciate you so much. And now with Sarah, it's just incredible to see you guys and what you're doing. And I so appreciate all of your work. And very exciting to meet you, Aidan, and hear when you started talking about Ingwe, my hair stood on end. So very, very special to talk to the three of you. Absolute pleasure.
Yeah, wonderful. Thank you, Craig. And thank you for helping us all remember and coming together with similar experiences is just so, so powerful. So grateful for this conversation.
Yeah, thank you, Craig. This is so wonderful to connect with you. Learned a lot just from this conversation, and really grateful to have had it. Stay tuned to hear a few words from Ingwe after the credits.
Thanks for listening to Tracking Connections. You can find everything related to the podcast and our current offerings at trackingconnections.net. We'll see you next time.
There's nothing like walking in a thunderstorm. Nothing like looking at the skies burst open. There's nothing like hearing the roar of a waterfall. Do you realize the roar of a lion alone can carry 3 miles? It is magnificent. But a roar of a motorcycle is deadly. I've been in the highlands of Scotland, looking out at snow-clad mountains. Not a human habitation in sight, just gorse and heather. And in front of me, a herd of red deer. Complete solitude. Am I lonely? No. It wraps around me like a blanket of peace. So that's why, my friend, you've got to go back and find the wilderness. Go out to the wilderness, my friends, and find a place. I call it a sacred place. A secret place, just yours. Just a little place for you. Go and sit there and learn to meditate. Take off your shoes so you can feel the energy of Mother Earth coming up from the ground. Lay the back of your hands down on the earth and breathe in very slowly, very deeply. breathe out very slowly and very deeply. Listen to every sound, the rustle of the leaves, the little bird there, the little mountain stream. Taste the air, smell the air. Taste and smell are very closely related. You can taste smoke in the air, you can smell smoke in the air. Soak all these things in, bring them to yourself down to your very gut. Just like bottle paper soaks up ink, you soak that up and bring it into you and just look into the wilderness. Say, help me. And you'll get an answer.